listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson.
Welcome to Newsmakers. The non-waiver trade deadline passed, and Richard Justice, Jamal Collier, and Kerry Muscat gives us an understanding as to why teams like the Dodgers, Nationals, and Cubs are the big winners. The Hall of Fame ceremony was last Sunday, and it was spectacular. I spoke to Andre Dawson, who paid tribute to Tim Raines, while Brad Ausmus had great things to say about Jeff Bagwell. We start with Justice, who talks about the winners and losers of the trade deadline. Enjoy the podcast. On the phone is MLB.com's Richard Justice. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Bill.
Richard, the non-waiver trade deadline has come and gone. I got to ask you, who is the biggest winner, you think?
Well, the Yankees and the Dodgers, the Dodgers had already separated themselves from the field, but the Yankees had a great day and a great whole trade deadline to add two starting pitchers, to add a frontline reliever in David Robertson and two relievers, and then Todd Frazier. Their question was, do they have enough starting pitching? I think now when you look at them, in fact, Joe Girardi's talking about maybe experimenting with a six-man rotation or something, but getting Jaime Garcia and then topping it off with Sonny Gray, who's pitched great the last month, they're winners, but you always go back to the team that added the best player, and I think that the Dodgers did that, and they've won, as we record this, they've won 40 out of 46. So I'm not sure they needed Yu Darvish, but now they have the potential to go into the playoffs with Kershaw, Darvish, Alex Wood, Rich Hill. I mean, they're in a good spot. But two other teams, Bill, let me just say, the Cubs acted early to get Jose Quintana, and then on trade deadline day, they added Justin Wilson, a quality left-handed reliever. I don't know what the Houston Astros were thinking to not go and make that deal done. And when you look at what the Washington Nationals did to their bullpen, they added three veteran, proven guys, which makes all those other guys, Albers and Blanton and Ollie Perez, all those other guys, the Nationals are good enough to win a World Series now. That wasn't true before Mike Rizzo made these two trades.
I mean, what can you say about Quintana? You just mentioned him. He really added a spark to this team once he got there.
Yeah, and maybe, they always say this, Bill, that these trades are about getting better. But they're also, and it is really important, you're sending a message to your players and your fans. Dallas Keuchel criticized his general manager, Jeff Luhnow, yesterday for not disappoint. I think his line was, disappointment is an understatement. And I'll remember this last year at the trade deadline. Blue Jays in Houston, Blue Jays get five guys. None of them knock your socks off, but there was an energy about it. The front office believes in us. They're going to do everything they can to give us a chance. Down the hallway, the Astros didn't do anything. And it's like, oh, they don't really believe in us. So, yeah, all those things are important.
What about the Dodgers? I mean, I can't help but think they have to be the favorite to win the World Series right now. They lost just three games in July. How do you explain that?
Yeah, it's amazing what they've done there. And they have three of the, I mean, if you, we voted for NL MVP today, three of their guys would probably not get first place votes, but they would all be on ballots. Corey Seager, Justin Turner, who might be the most underrated player in baseball, and then the rookie Cody Bellinger. And they have depth all over the place. Andrew Friedman added two late relievers to give Dave Roberts more options, and then to go get the best starting pitcher that changed teams is really, really good. And it's just, there's some uncertainty. Will they be able to? Will Kershaw be back? What kind of shape will he be in for October and all? But the Dodgers are it's not even a great team. It's like you can't believe what you're seeing. They only win on days that end in Y.
Unbelievable. Hey, I read your story recently, and you talked about the Tampa Bay Rays, that their honorable mention. Could you talk about what they did?
Yeah, their weakness was the bullpen. They upgraded that. They go out and get Lucas Duda upgraded in that area. They go out and get Echeverria, a guy you've seen a lot of.
Yes.
And I think their questions were about their team were, it's always scoring runs, but it wasn't scoring runs. It was, we're not doing a good enough job catching the ball, and we're not doing a good enough job holding leads late in games. Well, they Echeverria, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I always think, like, if you have a great shortstop and you have a really good center fielder, and the Rays have a Kevin Kiermaier who's the best defensive center fielder in the game, but he's hurt right now. But if you have a great shortstop and a great center fielder, you're a great defensive team. Jim Palmer always, it was one of the things he always would tell me about. So they got a great defensive shortstop, and they got relievers that are going to help them protect leads late in games. I mean, the way I look at it, the Yankees and Red Sox are going to make the postseason, and the Royals and the Rays are going to fight it out for that second wild card spot.
Wow. Richard, you talked about the Astros. I want to talk more about that and other losers of the trade deadline. You seem to be in shock that the Astros didn't do anything.
Well, you and I just came from Cooperstown, and one of the inductees was Jeff Bagwell, who was a trade deadline acquisition and traded for Larry Anderson. And the point is, and you and I are old enough to remember when a veteran guy named Doyle Alexander was traded for a future Hall of Famer named John Smoltz. And the point I'm making is, those trade deadline deals have such risk, and we all like them. You know, I appreciate it so much a couple of years ago when Billy Beane put all his cards on the table. But at the end of the day, they didn't win the wild card game against Kansas City, and they did trade Addison Russell.
Right.
And those things can come back to bite you. But I do think there are times, and I think the Dodgers recognize this, that how many times do you have a window like this when your team is 30 over and you know it's going to win the division? So Jeff Leno, I know he was interested in Brad Hand. He couldn't get comfortable with the price, and Brad wasn't traded. He couldn't, whatever reason, he didn't get Justin Wilson. So what they needed the Cubs, rather than the Astros looking bad, the Cubs looked really smart. I think Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer looked at the market and said, there's more teams seeking starting pitching than there are teams going to trade starting pitching. And they were aggressive early and got Quintana. And then the really one that I think would sting the Astros, because they have bullpen injury issues and bullpen performance issues right now,
right,
is that Justin Wilson went from the Tigers to the Cubs and didn't go to the Astros. So, you know, we'll see what it is. It's on the players now, and they have Lance McCullers on the DL. They have Carlos Correa on the DL, George Springer, Will Harris, their second-best reliever, and they haven't gotten a win out of Dallas Keuchel in 2 months. So he's pitching today, and we'll see. It's disheartening for the front office. Having said all that, maybe he'll go get Justin Verlander tomorrow, but I doubt it.
You know, Richard, you know, other teams also didn't make trades. Any other teams you think were disappointments?
I thought the Padres would trade Brad Hand. I thought they had a marketable guy, and they would go out and trade him. I guess I thought the Red Sox would shop around a little harder for starting pitching. Maybe they did, but you know, it was clearly a seller's market. I think Cleveland wanted to add a pitcher and wasn't able to do it. But all the first place teams did go out and add somebody. It's just that when you look at what the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Nationals, Yankees did, it's a little bit more impressive. And the Red Sox got Addison Reed. They didn't had to hold the lead last night, but now Addison Reed's been really good the last couple of years. And so to slot him there in front of Craig Kimbrel, they got better too.
I want to change the subject a little bit. Adrian Beltre, he was able to get his 3,000th hit. I got to tell you, this was a guy, I was living in L.A. when he first came into the league, and I thought he was going to be a bust, but he proved me wrong. What do you think of Adrian Beltre?
I think he's the most respected player in the game, and I think in his clubhouse he's the most beloved player in the game. I'll tell you 10 stories. You know, the way they got him was they were trying to sign somebody else at another position. I forget now. And Don Welke, a veteran scout, is now with the Padres, just basically begged Nolan Ryan and John Daniels and Ron Washington, hey, I want you to fly to Vegas and meet this guy. And Welke had known him for a long time. And what he said was, this guy's a great player. But you can look at the stats and see that he's a great player. And I'm telling you, he's a great defensive player, but he's a guy you want on your team. And he's helped change the way we think about the Texas Rangers. Every manager, Ron Washington, told me once that guy's only about one thing, winning and being a good teammate. He gets after the veteran players. He puts an arm around the young players. We've all seen him play in so much pain, played in pain, so much pain last year in Toronto in the postseason that he could not get up and down the steps and wouldn't make an excuse about it. I don't know where he ranks on the list of all-time third basemen. I would say he's top five. He's clearly one of the top 10 third basemen, and his ticket to Cooperstown is punched before he got his 3,000th hit.
Wow, that's amazing. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, you and I went there this past weekend. And what'd you think of the whole ceremony? I thought it was real good. I thought Bagwell was the best. I thought Pudge Rodriguez was really good. He was emotional. He was amazing. What'd you think?
It's quite a challenge for these five people to sum up their lives. In you know, they give you 12 minutes. They all went over that. And to try to put some context into all that they did. You know, last year, John Smoltz, or 2 years ago, had a message he wanted to send about youth baseball. But I think Pudge was so touching because the emotion when he talked about his family and his kids was so real. Raines was extremely emotional. And I know Bagwell enough that he was clearly fighting some emotions. I love John Schuerholz's speech because his message was, and I think it's true of all successful people in some way, my life is a confluence of events. He was a teacher in Baltimore who happened to write the Orioles, who happened to know, have heard about his father. Lou Gorman took a chance on him in Baltimore. Ewan Kauffman took a chance on him in Kansas City. Ted Turner and Terry McGuirk took a chance on him in Atlanta. But he said that wouldn't have been enough. I had George Brett here. I had Chipper Jones there. I had Dick Houser here. I had Bobby Cox there. I had I have Glavine, Smokes, Maddox, and Avery in there. Saberhagen, Gubazaw, Danny Jackson, and Buddy Black there. And I just thought it was so gracious, you know, and you and I both know him and the way he operates and how he empowers people and trusts people.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that man, and I thought it's a wonderful day, and, you know, afterwards you can tell that they are physically tired, but they're emotionally spent because what they're all told is you're not going to enjoy this weekend.
Right.
You just got to get through your speech. But next year you will enjoy it and you will understand fully the class you're in, that you're now in a class with Hank Aaron and Frank Robinson, and that's going to be something that for the rest of your life you're trying to get your wrap your mind around.
Bud Selig was pretty good too. I thought he had a great speech.
Yeah, and he's had a remarkable life, you know, and he said history hangs by a thread. And had the Milwaukee Braves not left, had the Milwaukee Braves not moved to Atlanta, had it not become his obsession to bring a team back, knocked on doors, and then to just, he changed the way we think. He changed the sport in terms of, the sport was not healthy when he took over. The sport was bursting in good health when he left. But he changed the way we think about the commissioner. We finally understand that the commissioner needs to come from the four walls of baseball. You need a commissioner that speaks the language of baseball because, as Bart Giamatti said, the players have their representation. The commissioner only has sway over one side. But what Bud also did was convince the owners to speak with one voice, and the players and owners were like, hey, we can do great things if we all work together. His legacy is pretty amazing.
No doubt about it. I mean, revenue sharing, I mean, he had a big role in that. And also, I like the way the playoffs, you know,
Yeah, and the technology. I mean, I think he would say it began with labor peace, that the 8 work stoppages, the owners and players tried to kill the game. And as painful as the 94 cancellation of the World Series was, and I think he would say this, maybe we had to go through something like that to come out the other side to get a new. We were in the era, the reserve clause was gone, we were in an era of free agency, but the economic system was dated back to Ebbets Field, and things had to change. And it was as painful as it was, look where we're at now, 73 million attendance, competitive balance. The baseball led the way in the technological revolution, and he was the man at the top of the masthead when all those things happened.
Richard Justice, he's the best. Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
My next guest is Jamal Collier. He covers the Nationals for MLB.com. He explains why the Nationals were winners before the trade deadline. Enjoy the podcast.
On the phone is Jamal Collier. He covers the Nationals for MLB.com. He's one of the best writers in the game. Jamal, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bill.
Jamal, the Nationals have definitely improved their bullpen now. How far do you think they could go with this bullpen now? What do you think about the moves they made? Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, any time. I mean, it's so difficult to rebuild a bullpen or rebuild any kind of section of your team on the fly. That's kind of the task that the Nats had here at the trade deadline, and almost kind of revamp their entire bullpen, you know, midseason. And I think that they did as good a job as they really could have when you add three pieces to the pen, three guys who can help you out and get you late, you know, outs late in games, and guys who've done that before and won't be kind of intimidated or the moment won't be foreign to them when you get into the postseason, you get into just kind of a late game situation. So I really like Mathis and Doolittle. I like that trade a lot a couple of weeks ago. And then, you know, right before the deadline, getting Brandon Nitzler, I think is going to be one that, another guy who has experience closing, he has experience, you know, pitching just late in the game and setting up. And I don't know exactly where he's going to slide into the mix, you know, in between 7 and 9. But, again, he's another guy who just when you can count on late in the game in the postseason, just kind of shorten the game up a little bit. So, you know, will it be enough? Kind of remains to be seen. Obviously, some other teams in the National League loaded up as well on stuff before the trade deadline. But I think this is a very positive a couple of weeks for the Nats, and I think you feel a lot better about this bullpen now than you did, say, you know, 3 weeks ago.
I'll tell you, lately I've seen Doolittle closing for the Nationals. Do you think he could be the long-term guy when it's all said and done?
I do, actually. I mean, I think the one thing with Doolittle that is concerning, at least that Dusty Baker and the Nats have kind of expressed concerns with, is that he's a guy who has had shoulder injuries. Mm-hmm. He's been to the DL on and off in the past. I think the thing with that is that they don't want to, you know, he's not a guy they want to go to 3 days in a row, a guy they want to go to 4 out of 5. They want to kind of make sure they can limit him and preserve him through the season. So I think that's the one concern with him is that you don't, you know, you can't just kind of use him freely and whenever because of his kind of past injury history, same with Mattson.
Right.
So I think that's pretty much the only concern you have with a guy like Doolittle. Other than that, I mean, he's looked really good. He's given him some runs, I should say, and has some walks kind of oddly, but he's looked really good. I mean, he needs to get the outs that he needs to kind of settle in. He doesn't let things snowball. He's not scared of the moment and has a really good idea and plan about what he's doing out in the mound. I've been really impressed with what I've seen with him these first couple of weeks. And I think that, you know, he definitely can be a guy to stay in that role and lock down that ninth inning if they want to keep him there, but they also could, you know, use Nitzler as well here tonight.
I know that when it comes to the playoffs, sometimes you can use a 3-man rotation, sometimes a 4. Any concern about the starting pitching? I know Max Scherzer had neck spasms, which is nothing, and he'll be okay. But what about the rest of that starting rotation? I know Gio Gonzalez is having a great season. Any concerns about the starting pitching?
So, I mean, one of the interesting things coming out of the deadline is that, you know, the Nets were linked to a couple starting pitchers, I guess, right before, you know, in the days coming up. Rizzo said, look, they really never got, you know, serious or close to any real trades for any starting pitchers. But, you know, I think on one hand it's a little surprising just because they just check in on everything and they kind of pursue every option. But on the other hand, I think that they were good in the starting pitching realm as well. I'm not concerned about it. I'm also operating under the assumption that Steven Strasburg will be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, based off this injury that he had, that he's on DL for right now, I think this is something that is not as serious, not too serious for Strasburg. It's not season ending or anything. I think it's a kind of a case where you have this 10-day DL right now. You have the huge lead. You may as well sit him down for 2 weeks or so. Right. Make sure he's right. Make sure he's, you know, operating at 100%. And you know what? This is a guy you need much more in, you know, the next 2 months, really, than you need the next 2 weeks or so. So I think that with Strasburg healthy, you put him and Max at the top of your rotation, and it's as good a top of your rotation, you know, as anybody. Even with the Dodgers, when they have Kershaw and Darvish or you know, Lester and Quintana or whoever the Cubs are going to, you know, line up their 1 and 2, I think the Nats still can kind of stack up with everybody else with those two guys at the top. I think, you know, Gio's obviously been having an amazing season at number 3. And then Tanner Roark is kind of been a little bit up and down this season, but he looks like he kind of turned a bit of a corner. I think, you know, still is a solid option at number 4. I think that they have enough to get by with a playoff rotation. Still a pretty good playoff rotation. I think the biggest thing was to make sure you have that bullpen ready because, you know, we've seen how important bullpens are in postseasons, the past couple postseasons especially, and I think that you can't have a bullpen that you're not, you know, they're kind of on the fence about. So I thought if they're going to add anything here before the deadline, even the next month or so through waivers, I think that they probably should be focusing on their bullpen just to make sure that they're confident in that going into October.
How do you explain Strasburg? It seems like every year he's always hurt, with the exception of 1 year or an innings limit or whatever. How do you explain that? Do you think that he'll be really ready for the postseason this time?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, on one hand, he's had a run of bad luck. I mean, it's kind of been some freak injuries, or, you know, 1 year there was the workout thing with the back and neck. There's been, you know, some arm trouble coming, you know, at times. It's a combination of, I think, just like you said, a little bit of bad luck. Also, pitching is really bad for you, and it's, you know, not the best thing to be doing to your arm. And I think that the guy who, you know, has such that came up with such the velocity that he had, the breaking pitches he had, you know, the year before, last year he was talking about when he started all of a sudden throwing a slider and putting, you know, extra stress on his arm. I think it's just a combination of things that kind of been real unfortunate that, you know, this guy who really wants to stay healthy, and we've seen kind of firsthand just how hard the guy works and how many things he does,
yes,
you know, to try to stay on the field and stay there at the end. As he said it from the beginning of the season, that it's his ultimate goal is to be there at the end and to be there in the postseason to take the ball. You know, whether he'll be there or not, I don't think this injury right now, that the nerve impingement in his elbow, is going to keep him out. I think that this is something that'll kind of come and go. I think the biggest thing is to make sure this thing is fully out of the way, you know, sit him for a little bit, and then get him ready to go back here in the next couple of weeks, or really just need him ready by about September 1st or so to make sure he's in stride for the postseason. So, you know, it's hard to say whether or not that'll happen, and obviously people will point to his injury history and point to, you know, the things that keep happening every single year and say that it won't, but you know, I have confidence that this is not the injury that's going to keep him down for the rest of the year, and that, you know, hopefully that we're going to see that guy pitch in the postseason, because it could be really fun to see what this team could do if you have those guys at the top.
Jamal, Mike Rizzo made a move that I thought was a great move, and it shocked me, was when he acquired Howie Kendrick. I mean, I'm saying, okay, wow. And then he goes out and he has 5 hits in a game. I mean, what a move that was. And I know Dusty Baker, I mean, him and Chris Heisey were close. That had to be a shocker, too. Talk about that move, and I thought it was a great move for the Nationals.
It's one of those underrated moves that you see teams make that kind of just adds depth and replaces really what was a bit of a hole in the Nats, and they didn't really have a great right-handed pitch hitting option. You know, Chris Heisey had kind of filled that role last season, and kind of in this season and last season, he really just struggled. He couldn't stay out the DL. He really was not effective this year. And that's, you know, is that the guy you want to go into a playoff spot when you've got, you know, look at the starters in the rest of the National League. We're talking about Clayton Kershaw, Alex Wood, Rich Hill, John Lester, Jose Quintana, Justin Wilson. They just picked up. The Dodgers added 2 more lefties to their bullpen. There's a lot of lefties out there. So you need a good right-handed pinch hitter to come off the bench. And so far, so good for Howie Kendrick. He's been really effective. He's a guy who also can help right now out there in left field while Jason Worth is on the DL. So you got a better bat, you know, to put out there with Adam Lynn, you know, in the meantime as well, until you get some of your outfielders back. So, again, that was a move that I really liked too, and it's kind of one of those under-the-radar moves that you see a lot of championship teams or teams that go deep in the postseason make, that you add to your bench, you add to a guy who can potentially platoon or do something off the bench in the postseason that, you know, doesn't necessarily scream a flashy move, but it's kind of an effective and necessary one.
You mentioned Jason Worth. Are we going to see him again?
I think so. I think it's still early enough that he still can get back and ramp up. I mean, it's kind of a weird freak thing. Also, you look at a guy who fouls a ball off his toe, and all of a sudden he can't put weight on it here still 2 months later, weight enough on it to run. You know, I think right now they're backing off it, you know, as of what, August 2nd here was your speed, because he's backing off the toe and trying to make sure he gives it some more time to heal, because every time they try to test it and run and ramp up, it just doesn't respond. Again, I think there's still enough time that he's able to do everything else. He's able to swing still. He's able to kind of, you know, at least, you know, go through the motions of most other baseball activity. Just kind of can't really run on it right now. So it's still early enough that I think that he's got time to, you know, once the toe gets healed, get back into a rehab assignment, get back into the swing of things. But it's just an odd thing that he's, you know, been out for 2 months here. After what looked like a relatively innocent play when he fouls the ball off of stuff.
Right. And the final question, Jamal, Edwin Jackson. I know he's had two good starts, one bad one since he's been there. Is he for real? I mean, I remember I covered him in 2012, and he was okay. What do you think of Edwin Jackson?
He's Edwin Jackson, I think, at this point. I think we've seen, you know, he's had the I forget how long his career has been, but you know, we've seen this guy over the course of his career. He's a veteran guy, and he kind of is what he is about at this point. He's not necessarily a number one or a top of the rotation starter. He's probably somewhere a guy who is a number five starter. He's going to give you somewhere around league average innings, sometimes a little worse, sometimes a little better. And I think that that's a kind of case where, one, you know, this team is up by a lot of games in the division, and it doesn't, you know, they could probably start Mir Yu in the number five spot for the rest of the season, and they still win his division by 15 games. So, I mean, it's just a case where I think that you got a guy, Edwin Jackson, who's done it before, who can eat up some innings for you, and who also, you know, is going to take the ball. Edwin Jackson's really a guy who pretty much stays off the DL and has been healthy in his career. So that's one thing, is that you got, he's going to eat innings for you. He's going to take the ball every fifth day. And I think that if you mix him, and if Eric Fetty gets another start, looks really good or continues to look really good in the minors, potentially you can start, you know, mixing and matching with those guys between Fetty and Jackson as to who you want to take the number five spot. But, you know, Edwin Jackson is going to, we've seen kind of through his career, he's going to be what he is. But I think that that's fine for this team right now, that just needs a guy who, you know, they don't have to worry about getting hurt or worry about monitoring whatever it might be. They can just count on this guy to take the ball every fifth day and try to keep their offense in the game for five or six innings.
Jamal Collier, listen, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill. Anytime.
My next guest is Carrie Muscat. She covers the Cubs for MLB.com, and she explains why the Cubs are red hot.
I have one of the best writers in baseball, Carrie Muscat. She covers the Cubs for MLB.com. Carrie, thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem. It was a crazy game last night for the Cubs, that's for sure.
Yeah, I saw it. You know, when I saw the Cubs a couple of weeks ago when they were in New York, I mean, they didn't look good at all. And now suddenly they're 16-3 in their last 19 games. What was the turnaround?
You know, as silly as this sounds, it seems like they just needed the All-Star break to just sort of go home and regroup and maybe look in the mirror a little bit and figure out what they needed to do. I don't know if there was like a World Series hangover and that's what was the problem in the first half, because they were just a 500 team, and I don't know if you've ever covered a 500 team. They're impossible to deal with because it's just like you win one, you lose one. The guys just got really grumpy. I love Joe Maddon's description, though, on Tuesday night. He said that it was kind of like an old Plymouth car that just didn't turn over. You know, the engine just wouldn't turn over. And then finally, at the All-Star break, somehow everything clicked and it engaged, and now the car is running just great.
The players
were saying after Tuesday's win over the Diamondbacks, the players were saying that they, you know, we're starting to feel the same way they did in 2015 and last year. So that's a good sign.
What about Quintana? I mean, ever since he's been there, it looked like he added some juice to that team. The teams look so much better with him in the rotation.
Well, I think the trade for Quintana was made just on the last day of the break. Mm-hmm. And I think somehow when the players saw that, it just, they came back from the first half and just like, hey, you know, we've got a new starting pitcher, we've got a guy who can just deliver us quality starts, and it really gave them a jolt. I mean, it was just like this little extra energy boost that they got. Of course, it didn't hurt that he comes out and in his very first start, he faces the Orioles and strikes out 12 and throws shutout innings. I mean, that was certainly an impressive debut. He's been he's really something to watch. Alex Avila, the new catcher that they acquired at the trade deadline, caught his bullpen on Tuesday, and Avila was saying he could catch him blindfolded, the way that he just throws so automatically just to the strike zone, and it's just really impressive.
What about the offense, Carrie? It's really coming around now, and do you think it will keep it up?
Well, I hope they keep it up. They've kind of scuffled a little bit. They've had difficulties with situational hitting, you know, leaving runners on. That's been kind of an issue in the first half. When they first came out of the break, they were doing okay. They had a couple of little instances where they sputtered. They won two games last week where they struck out 17 times. That's almost impossible.
Right.
and the offense is still kind of trying to get its act together. Really, the biggest thing all year, and something that they just will never resolve, is just they really miss Dexter Fowler at the top of the order. Because he got everything started, and they've just sort of been rotating different leadoff guys in there. There's not going to be one set guy. It's going to be sort of a leadoff by committee. And they just need to accept that, and just whoever's up there at the top just has to be the guy to get him going.
It's good that they're back, to where they were last year. I like to know, how far do you think they can go? Do you think they can repeat as champions?
Well, the Dodgers are really good, and the Nationals are really good, and repeat. I don't know. I'm encouraged. I was really encouraged by the way they played against the Brewers. They played three games, took two out of three, and they were really close games and really tight, and those were impressive. This is kind of, we're right now in a tough week because they're playing the D-backs, and then they play host to the Nationals here at Wrigley, and then they've got to face the D-backs again. So this is kind of a little bit of a tough stretch for them. So let's see. I'm not going to say repeat. I'm going to say they'll get to October, and they'll be in the playoffs. But I don't want to say repeat yet.
Talk about the job Joe Maddon has done, because you know what, this guy could have panicked, but obviously he didn't, and we see what's going on now.
Well, I don't think panic is a word that Joe would ever use. He's been the calmest person around. And I guess actually what I sort of like to see was after Saturday's game in Milwaukee, when the team struck out 17 times for the second time in a week, he was pretty irate about the offense and about what the players were doing. And one thing Maddon knows how to do is get his message across kind of through the media a little bit. You know, he won't have a team meeting, but he'll sort of send his message through us. And he knows the players are looking at Twitter, and even though the players say they aren't, I know they are. And somehow they hear about it, and they sort of pick up on what he's trying to say. And then, of course, you know, his message is passed on to the coaches, who then – you know, sort of say, hey, let's get your head out of your butt type thing. But panic is not, I don't think Joe ever panicked. I think he just was really, I would say, more confused by what the heck was going on and why the car engine didn't turn over.
Right. Also, they added a reliever. Could you talk about that? I thought it was a great move.
The Cubs technically added three players after the break, or three players in July. They picked up Quintana right at the All-Star break, and then they added lefty Justin Wilson and also catcher Alex Avila from the Tigers. Wilson is really a good add for them because it gives them another setup pitcher for closer Wade Davis, mm-hmm. who's been absolutely perfect.
Yes.
But if, let's just say that maybe Davis can't go, they weren't real comfortable with their other options in that role, so Wilson could sub there. It's a nice addition also because Wilson is under team control for next year,
mm-hmm.
and Davis is not. This Davis is just on a one-year deal, so we'll see how that goes. What I kind of enjoyed about Wilson was that on his first game, he knew about the fact that the Cubs relievers dance after one of the players hits a home run
right.
at Wrigley. They dance in the bullpen, and he was right in there dancing. So I give him a lot of credit. He joined in with the guys, and he was one of the teammates, and it was really pretty funny to see.
Do you see the Cubs making any more moves, even though the deadline's over?
Right.
The non-waiver. I mean, they can
right.
still make trades.
Right.
Talk
yeah,
about that.
I don't think so. I think that they've got some guys at AAA that have been up and helped the big league team, like Tommy La Stella, who's a left-handed bat that they could use off the bench. The catcher who they had before they acquired Avila, Victor Caratini, he did really well, and we'll give him some help. They've got a reliever, Justin Grimm, who they had to send down to make room for Wilson. He'll be good when he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a couple other pitchers. I think they're pretty. This is pretty much the roster that's going to go all the way.
Wow, that's amazing. She's one of the best, Carrie Muscat. Listen, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thanks, Bill. Thanks for the call.
You take care.
It's on to the Hall of Fame, and I spoke to Andre Dawson, who paid tribute to Tim Raines.
He said last week that he would not be in the Hall of Fame if not for you. I just want to know, when you hear that, how do you feel?
Well, that's the farthest thing from the truth. Because Tim Raines was gifted, he was talented, and he had a demeanor and a spirit about him that spelled success.
Mm-hmm.
He chose baseball. He probably could have been successful as a football player, even as small as he is. But he chose baseball because he was gifted,
right.
athletic-wise. And we had a special bond, a special relationship, so to say. But I look back on him, and I look at all of the accolades that have come his way. The success he had, and it was through sheer dedication, determination, hard work.
He always talked about he was in trouble at the beginning of his career. What did you do to make sure he went the right path?
Well, he made a comment to me once along the lines of, "I want to be like you." And it kind of took me because I wasn't sure what he was saying.
Right.
He was a major leaguer.
Right.
He had had success in the minor leagues. And we were both probably striving to reach, have an objective to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we sort of bonded from that point on, and became the best of friends, because I looked at it like I was more serious, the focused, no nonsense.
Right.
And he was like a comedian.
Right.
He would see and sense the good in everything, regardless of if it was good or bad.
Right.
And he had his Nike, his way of making you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't let you get down,
right.
Distracted.
Mm-hmm.
He found the good in that. He found a way to bring that out of you, make you laugh.
And right.
So he was like a comedian. And for me, it was like the perfect storm, because it allowed me at the ballpark to not be so serious.
Right.
A lot of my teammates wouldn't approach me because of that.
No kidding.
Right, they wouldn't. But Timmy, he'd come up to me and he jabbed me.
Yeah.
And turn and run because he knew I couldn't catch you. And you had to stand and you had to laugh at
yeah.
it. So he had his way of how he could approach me,
mm-hmm.
and get things out of me.
Right.
And that's why I say, for me, it was like the perfect perfect friendship, mm-hmm. you know, because it allowed me to relax right. when I was at the ballpark.
Now, he named your he named his son after you. I mean, tell me how you feel about that.
Well, Andre Reigns, actually, we share the same birthday. Yeah. What a coincidence that is. And, you know, when he first approached me about it, no one had ever come to me and asked me
right.
to be a godfather. And, you know, I said, well, I guess the answer to that is yes.
Right.
And when I think about it, you know, huge, you know, gesture as far as I'm concerned. He had a number of people, you know, friends growing up with
right.
from his neighborhood, other people he knew throughout the game, teammates. But for, you know, whatever obvious reasons, our reason, he approached me and, you know, I just said, well, you don't just say no to something like that.
You know, you talked about how much he, kind of like he helped you grow. But what did you say to him that made him grow, that made him become a solid citizen in Montreal?
Well, I told him, first of all, you know, we're going to have distractions in life. And for most people, they're all not going to be the same distractions.
Mm-hmm.
I say we got to learn from our distractions, from our mistakes, and move forward. But with Tim, he was a man at a very early age. And I say that because he was man enough to confront his issue
mm-hmm.
and knew that, you know, he needed to seek help moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't try to fight this himself and say, you know what, I can beat this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew that there was a bigger hurdle
right.
in front of him from that standpoint. So just taking that initial step, I just wanted to be there for him,
mm-hmm.
you know, letting him know that, you know what, if you need me, you know, I'm here. We can talk about anything. We started hanging out together a little bit more, and I wasn't one to really hang out.
Right.
But that just, you know, blossomed our relationship, our friendship, you know, because I could see somebody reaching out.
Hmm.
And even though I was still fair, I wasn't considered, I was a young player, but I had so fast grown to veteran status.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, I know what it means to take someone under your wing,
mm-hmm.
and this is probably what he's asking me to do.
Now, he became a successful player, obviously. Are you shocked that it took so long for him to be inducted?
Yes, I am, because I've always felt that, you know, he had a Hall of Fame career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's only one Ricky Henderson.
Right.
But to me, he was the epitome of Ricky Henderson in the National League.
Right.
And that's just, you know, the game. That's what his game was. And for 6-7 years, he was probably one of the top three players in the league. And he did it. He did things consistently. You're talking about from the leadoff spot, setting the table,
right.
and that's what he did. You know, he was a leader in a sense, because you fed off of his success. He made other guys around him better ball players
right.
as a result of how good he was. And you know, I just think that, you know, the Hall of Fame, when you think about it, I understand, you know, how sacred it is, and the process, how you gotta let it play itself out. With Timmy, I just try to remind him that, you know, it's inevitable. At some point, it's gonna happen. But it got a little scary there when the rules changed,
right.
and you know, it went from 15 to 10 years. But I was always certain that it was just a matter of time, and once, you know, the writers finally got it right, it would happen.
You'll be here on Sunday. Will you cry?
You know what? I was strong. I thought I would shed a tear through my ceremony because I dedicated it to my mother, my grandmother who had passed.
Right.
And kind of my mother, my mother more so, would look forward to that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen. But I knew I had to be strong for my family.
Right.
I knew that they would shed tears, and I knew I had to be strong. With Timmy, I don't think I will, because knowing him, he's going to be funny. You know, and I told him, I said, be mindful of what you say about me, because remember, I'm going to be sitting behind you. So I'm just trying to humor him up a little bit, because as of 2 weeks ago, I was told, and it came to my understanding that he hadn't written a speech. He was just going to, speak from his heart. And I tried to, you don't really want to do that, I think, because it's going to be a little different, once you step up to that podium.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, a sea of people out there. So your emotions are going to change.
Right.
I say you need something concrete. A barrier that you can, you could talk to, feel it, and release a lot of that energy that you're gonna have. And he said, nah. He said, I'm just gonna take down some names. I'm gonna talk. I said, trust me. I know it's a little late. I said, but you need to get something down. I said, because you don't want to screw this up. You only do this once in your lifetime. It's your stage. It's your 20 minutes, and you want to make the most of it. Make it the best 20 minutes of your life. And then I was told, okay, well, he's working on it. I know he's going to be funny. I hope he's going to be funny. I hope he don't get emotional. If he gets emotional, then it might hit me somewhere where I least expect. I'm happy, excited, and I'm looking forward to it.
My final question, you're what I call a true role model. For as young as you were, to help Tim Raines go from, from the drugs to a solid citizen, you got to feel good about that.
I'm happy because, it's a situation that turned out, it could have gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live your life through that, and you know that you could have made a difference,
mm-hmm,
in somebody's life, that's what's, I think, more rewarding, feeling wise.
Right.
And he, he deserves everything.
Right.
Everything that's come his way, that's coming good. Because he's had a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had, the type of life, coming, getting to this point,
mm-hmm,
where it's been, all peaches and cream.
Right.
He's had his moments. He's had his issues. He's had, health issues he's had to struggle with and deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But, through it all, one thing I'm most proud of is that he never changed as an individual.
Right.
He's the same humble craziness that I knew when I first met him. And I really, I'm thankful that, I had an opportunity to share some things with him during, the course of our lives together. Mm-hmm. And, it means a great deal to me that to this day we're still probably the best of friends. He's always been my best friend.
Right.
He don't know that. I've always told him, you count your friends on one hand, sometimes a finger's on your hand. But he's always been my best friend, because with him, every time I see him, I know what I'm going to get with him.
Right. Listen, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
My last guest is Tigers manager Brett Ausmus. And he had a lot to say about Jeff Bagwell, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame this past Sunday. Brad Ausmus, thank you so much for being on the show. Brad, I went to the Hall of Fame ceremony, and Jeff Bagwell is a good friend of yours. And during his speech, the first person he mentioned was you. And what was your reaction when you heard that he talked about you?
Well, I didn't. We had a game going on at the time, so I actually watched it online after the fact, and obviously wanted to hear Jeff's speech in its entirety. We're very close. We have been since our playing days. Spent a lot of time together in clubhouses and on the field together, and we still remain good friends this day. So I appreciate it. I was very appreciative that he would even mention me, but I was obviously much more happy that he's inducted the Hall of Fame.
Obviously, he deserved to be there. What impressed you the most about him?
You know, I think people don't... It's two things that impress me the most. One, most people don't realize he's one of the best base runners I've ever seen. Not just talking about stealing bases, but just running the bases in general, whether it was going first to third or second to home, or he could manipulate a slide as he was sliding. And secondly, I don't think people understood the pain he was going through the last few years of his career with his shoulder. And we would travel on getaway day and go to the plane. We had to get dressed up and wear blazers. And I would literally have to hold his blazer sleeve up so he could get his right arm into it. So it was, I don't think people understood how much pain he was actually playing with.
And obviously when he hurt that shoulder, it was during the time you guys were really winning. And how bad did you feel for him that he can do but so much?
Well, it was tough because he was really in the postseason, just coming off the bench. He was a pinch hitter. It was very fortunate that he did get a hit in the World Series as a pinch hitter. I was happy for him, but it was tough for him, I think, to watch because he's the guy that wants to be in the thick of it.
Talk about Jeff Bagwell, the person. We've talked about him as a player. Talk about him as a person.
Well, it's great. One of the best teammates I've ever been around. He's one of the rare superstars who cares more about winning than he does his own statistics. And the way he played the game, you know, he wasn't a stand-up on the table and shout at your teammates type leader, but he led by how he went about his business, and he would quietly give bits of advice or instruction to players, maybe in a corner of the outfield during batting practice or sitting at a table in the food room. He wasn't pounding his fists on a clubhouse wall, but he was a great teammate and a very good leader.
Talk about the first time you met him. You're coming from another team. Talk about that.
Well, we were actually all state together in Connecticut. He was a year older than me, but I don't think we ever met then. The first time we met, I was probably playing with the San Diego Padres, and he was with the Astros, but it was just a cursory hello. You know, not a lot of guys from Connecticut in the big league, so it was... we did talk a little bit at that point, but we became close once I got traded over to the Astros in 1997. Really kind of hit it off as friends in spring training and hung out together right until the end of his career.
Biggio, Bagwell, they're in the Hall of Fame. Anybody else you played with on that team you think that should be considered?
I'm sure, yeah. Roger Clemens is certainly a guy is being considered. I'm trying to pull names out of thin air, I'd have to think, but I'm sure there may be.
Listen, thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure.